I would like to welcome our guest speaker for this evening, Judy H.
Hi, everyone. Hi, my name is Judy, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Hi. Okay. Thank you. I'm really, really happy that you're recording this tonight because I've been thinking about you all weekend, and I kind of want to deviate from my usual spiel about my recovery and how I got here. I've done that in a lot of places, and there's a lot of recordings of that also that I can refer you to. But I feel especially privileged that I'm speaking at a 100-pounder meeting. And 46 years ago, I came into this program and I said I was a 100-pounder. I weighed 222 pounds. I was 5'4", and I felt I had 100 pounds to lose. And as it's turned out, the most I've ever lost in the program is 85 pounds. Never got to the last 15. Everybody's in their last 15. And I have now achieved a weight that seems to be a nice set point. It means I'm in easy living. I am have no fear. I'm in that position of neutrality around food. I eat nearly everything. I just want to put that out to you. If you are a 100-pounder, that means you're going to be here a while. You know, I thought I'm going to be here 6 months. I'm going to lose 100 pounds and be a prom queen and leave this place, right? I never had an idea that 46 years later, I would be looking forward to spending my evening talking with other compulsive overeaters about our malady. But I'm extremely, extremely grateful. And maybe, Amy, if you want to put up my before picture now, we'll just take a look for a second so you can see that, you know, I'm not just one of those people playing games here. I was obese my whole life. I think you can see the before picture there. I'm one of those people who has been obese since childhood, which means that by the time that kind of a person gets to be age 25, they have three times as many fat cells as a normal person. And those fat cells never go away. Even if we shrink them, they're waiting to be filled. And I tell the story often of where that picture was taken. It was in a marketplace in Saigon. And I guess it was about 1971, maybe 72. And a lady in the marketplace, a Thai lady came up to me. A bunch of ladies gathered around me and were staring. And this one lady came up and she pushed in my top of my arms, my bulbous upper arms. And then she watched to see if it was really a balloon, if it would pop back or how, you know, it would behave, because she'd never seen anyone like me before. And ha ha, you know, when I was a child, it was fatty, fatty, 2x4, can't get through the bathroom door. I was humiliated and ridiculed my entire childhood. And I never could feel it. I remember thinking at age about 8, thinking, geez, there are people at home who would feel bad if they saw you guys treating me this way. You know, I had projected what my parents would feel. I couldn't feel it myself until many years in this program. When I first came here, I could not cry. My sponsor had to teach me to cry. So if you've come here and you're overweight and you've been at it your whole life, if like me, you dieted your way to 222 pounds, you know, I didn't get here by willy-nilly running amok, eating whatever I wanted. I walked, the last house on the block for me was walking into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And I went there very quietly. I sat in the room. I didn't say anything. For many, many weeks, I went back. I never said anything. And I had been a lecturer for a living at that time. but I somehow felt like the people here were being so honest about themselves that I was sure that they could see through me and my con man and my tap dance games trying to impress. And I just didn't know how to be without all of that, you know. The lady leading the meeting was extremely angry. You knew she was going to leave the meeting and kill somebody. And I said, now there's my kind of people, you know. And I immediately asked her to be my sponsor. And 4 days later was November 22nd, 1974, which happened to be Thanksgiving morning. And I woke up crying and shaking in the midst of sugar withdrawals. Fourth day is the worst. Give up your diet on Thursday. And she helped me plan my Thanksgiving that day and helped me start in this process. So I'm extremely grateful. I can never, ever, ever give back what's been given to me here. But about 2 years into my recovery, I'd lost my weight. I'd lost my husband. He died of alcoholism. A lot of loss in early recovery. And also started getting very depressed. I found out later that in addiction recovery, that years 2 and 5 are milestones where we have a lot of trouble. There's a lot of relapse at years 2 and 5. And I believe that has to do with turning points. I believe that has to do with we're facing, do you want to go under the net or do you want to stay back in the old way of life? You know, and it's a crisis. So I went into therapy at that time. I was a therapist. I was an addiction counselor. I'd already been state licensed before I ever got to this program. I had a lot of help for other people, but didn't know a thing about how to help myself. And I went into therapy, and I remember the first time this guy met with me, he said, well, you're going to be a long-term patient. And, you know, I took offense. What? How did he know that about me? And turned out I stayed in therapy along with my recovery program for the next 22 years. So, I, as we all are, difficult case. But I was a difficult case also because I was smart. I had what we call a head full of program with a belly full of food. And I had a lot of answers and a lot of my own way. And today, 46 years later, a lot of people, when I let them know that I'm in the program, which I let everybody know, and you can let everybody know, I don't care. I don't have any anonymity about any of it. But they say, God, why do you still go to those meetings? You're thin. You look great. What do you need it for? And I said, well, I love this way of life. That's my answer. I love this way of life. And I want to keep living this way. And I want it to constantly be green. I want it to be new. So what is this way of life? It's living consciously. And I was just on a 4-hour workshop this morning where they were talking so much about in the 8th and 9th steps, not being so worried about your intentions, but what were the results you created and what were the effects you had? Paying attention to what you set out in the world. You know, I always wanted to judge you for your results and you should judge me for my intentions. Well, I had good intentions. You know, I could leave a devastated landscape around me, but golly, don't blame me. I had good intentions. On this workshop this morning, they said that our literature asks us to go back and take a look. So I'm talking about this way of life is about living consciously. And I've studied a little bit of Buddhism. This Buddhist monk was at a big party in New York, big literati party. And a lady came over to him and she said, oh, I've heard of that Buddhism. Tell me about Buddhism. And he said, well, do you want the long version or the short version? She said, oh, come on, it's a party. Give me the short version. So he said, well, the short version is pay attention. Pay attention. Pay attention. So I choose to live a life today where I pay attention to the effects I'm launching in the world. I try to pay attention to how your effects touch me. Very often when I'm hurt, my immediate reaction is anger. And it takes days before I really have a sense of what my true emotion was, which makes me one of those people who have to make a lot of amends. It doesn't mean that I excuse the person for hurting me, but I need to say, I had an untrue reaction to you the other day. I want to tell you what was really going on. And at the same time, my amends are about, someone was talking again on this meeting today about being snotty to salespeople on the phone. And that has been one of my big things, being like a haughty biatch, you know. And it's really a terrible form of bullying, because that person is strapped to that headset. They're making a living. And I want to air to them all my frustration and irritability about how important I am in my time and blah, blah, blah. And I very often had to go call back and apologize to people on the phone. I've had to march myself back to Macy's and apologize to a salesperson behind the counter. And these are the kind of things that have kept me eating in a reasonable way and walking the planet a little more lightly.
10 minutes.
Okay, thanks. Wow. So I guess what I really want to emphasize, being at a 100-pounder meeting, even though I don't qualify, but I do, is that, so you're going to be in the program for a long time if you've got 100 pounds to lose. So I want to emphasize being flexible and how much your program is going to change. And at least this has been my experience, that my food plans have changed over the years. My emphasis on what I have to work on has changed. My appreciation for different kinds of meetings has changed. It's all changed. So don't get locked into, this is the way they do it. Because very often, that's a way to set up a situation where you're going to leave. Because you're going to find something that irritates you or you don't like. I'm telling you, people and situations in these meetings have upset me terribly. And very often I would say, those SOBs aren't going to kick me out of there, you know? And sometimes you'll run into controversy in a program, people battling over different food plans. And I remember when a lot of this started, I forget what year it was, but there were two guys in the program. Here we were, a program predominantly not dominated by women. And two guys came up with these two opposing views. And one of them was a guy named Bill B. And he had a group he called Going Sane. And he said that eventually we would be able to eat like everybody else. And we didn't have to focus on so much on our food. We just had to study the big book. And we'd be healed. And the other guy was a guy named Fred S. down in Florida. And he said, no way. He started the HOW programs. And they said, you got to get really strict about that food first to get your head available for this other work, right? They were both pretty reasonable positions. I heard a speaker the other day, she said, you know, I have no opinion on other ways of doing things. And I thought, my God, what does she do with all the free time? Because I've got an opinion on everything. My head is constantly debating all of these issues. But I believe that the way it worked for me was in the beginning, I had to be very, very strict about food. I weighed and measured pretty consistently for the first 20 years. Okay? I always recommend to newcomers at least 2 years. And I had a food sponsor, and that was the person who witnessed my daily commitment to myself. And we weren't as fancy with internet and all this kind of stuff. We called up the person. Sometimes we left it on their machine. But we made some kind of commitment we were going to try for. And the next day, or if we had to, we'd call them in the middle of the day. But if not the next day, we'd tell them how we did that day and make the commitment for the next day. And that's how it was done. And then we had step sponsors that helped us with our psychological stuff. You know, it's a tripart illness, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And I was already geared for the emotional part because, I was a therapist. So that kind of investigation was interesting to me. The physical required, this work with a step sponsor. And I don't believe it matters whatever food plan you get on, as long as you're being witnessed by another OA person. Because that whole first period of time is about being honest and adjusting to discipline. And those are two biggies for the rest of the work, the next 45 years of constantly working toward discipline and self-honesty. So I guess I want to say that to tell you that now food is like no longer an issue for me. I am more, I think, of the Bill B camp, that the way I eat today is pretty casual. I don't think about it the way I used to. I usually have a general idea of how I'm going to eat that day, but it's kind of neutral. It's not my primary love object. It's not what I'm thinking about 24/7. And I know if you're new, you can't believe that. But I'm not recommending that you be that loosey-goosey in the first few years, because you need to get those muscles of discipline and honesty. You need to learn how to work those muscles. So that today I live pretty honestly. I'm not worried what someone's going to uncover about me. I'm not worried about what you're going to see that I'm not seeing. If you see something, tell me, because I'll be very open to taking a look at it. You know, if you say, you know, Judy, you don't realize, but the way you said that, you know, had this effect, I'll say, okay, let me think about that. You know, obviously someone was hurt or whatever. So that's a great way to live. I mean, who wouldn't want this program? So what else? I'm not sure what else I need to say about that. One time, some of you know, I had treatment centers for a few years, and that had a lot of things going with it. And when my first treatment center was clutched out of my arms and I thought I was going to die, the next intended step was, you know, you're out of work. Go back and finish writing your PhD dissertation and get that degree instead of the ABD, the all but the dissertation degree. So I wrote that, converted it to be a bestseller, went on national television, Oprah 3 times, a whole big career, lecturing, training all over the country. I never asked for it. I had some natural talents. I had to learn a lot more talents, and I did. And all of those things that happened, all the good things happened because I did what I was directed to. My sponsor told me, quit working so many jobs. So I gave up a job I really loved. And the next day they asked me to start this nation's first eating disorder unit. I didn't know that I had to create space. On my prayer shrine out in the backyard, two of the things that I prayed to are two empty cups. My sponsor used to ask me to carry a cup in my purse, an empty cup, to keep reminding myself that I'm an empty cup to be filled, that I'm not full of answers. And now I have a more curious attitude toward things. Even when I'm having a fight with my husband, I can approach him with, "I'd like to hear more about what you were saying," instead of trying to shut him up. And I really mean it. I do want to hear where he's coming from. Miracle. Miracle. So, oh God. You know, they told me, if you're eating like that, you're feeding the wrong hunger. That eventually, there's nothing you can eat, drink, buy, or kiss that's going to make any difference. You must sit down and do the writing and find out what the hunger is and find a way to get that filled that is not self-destructive. And, you know, for years I went around transferring my obsessions, you know, going from food to alcohol to abusive relationships to compulsive shopping, constantly fighting, until I stopped being so hungry for integrity, my own personal integrity, so that my behavior would match my intentions. I had that awareness of what I'm doing. Not all the time. I go back to a lot of my old behaviors, even after this ripe old age of 46 years in the program. And another friend of mine who's a long timer, she says, "Yeah, but our missteps back to the old way of life are different in terms of frequency, intensity, and duration. They don't happen as often. They don't last as long. And we go back quickly to getting back on track, to walking our own path, to being in sync with our true destiny." And I believe, well, you know, Carl Jung said that when he wrote back to Bill W. in the early days. And he said, "We in medicine can't help people like you. You suffer from a longing for the spirit, and it's truthfully only a spiritual solution." So for us with the food, it's a little more complicated than that, because we have to have a different relationship every day with our primary love object. We have to savor it. We have to make friends with it. It's complicated. And I think that's a great word to end on. I really look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. If you have a question for Judy, if you could please raise your hand in the participants, or you can send me a chat and I will ask her. Okay. When you talked about,
I'm sorry, what's your name? Is it Amy?
It's Amy, but I'm doing it for somebody on the chat.
Okay, great.
When you talked about that you looked at food differently, did you look at it as just fuel for your body? And how did that take a long time to be able to look at it like that?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. Often I do look at food for fueling my engine. Today I'm more interested in function than form. You know, I have some orthopedic issues that are created from my lifelong obesity. Scoliosis, spinal stenosis, blah, blah, blah. You'll get them too. It, you know, it's the price. And So I try to keep my body functional in terms of my yoga practice and a couple other different things I have to do, and I'm not real regular on those. I do different things depending on how I wake up and what's aching the most. So I want my food to reflect that. Also, during this COVID epidemic, I want to make sure that I'm staying very, immune, I guess. You know, so I want to keep a lot of, I'm eating more fruit than I usually do. More balancing with fruits and vegetables, which I always eat. Mostly vegetable and protein, low carb. That's my kind of general path. But I'm mixing in a few things I don't always have, quinoa and kind of a little bit of that. But mostly from the early on, and mostly what I want to stay with is I want emotional and spiritual clarity. I want to be able to trust the vibrations that are passing through me. I want to be highly attuned to my interactions with other people. You know, if I get around a person and the hairs stand up on my arms, hello, hello. Danger, warning. I have an excellent body that signals stuff like that to me. Never paid attention. Always totally reckless, thrill-seeking, throwing myself into the arms of dangerous people. So I mostly eat in a way that keeps me healthy, balanced, and aware. Clarity, 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 clarity. That'll tell you also what's the next thing you have to work on. Sometimes relapse is not always a terrible thing. If you come out of relapse and say, what was the signal? When did that binge happen way before that first bite? What was I avoiding? It was usually the next stage of growth. In my case, it was usually something positive coming down the pike that I didn't feel prepared for at all. You know, the man I'm with today, I never would have picked in the old days. We're together 26 years now. Fine, upstanding, solid citizen kind of person. What? He's not a con man. He's not a tap dancer. Love him.
Okay, the next, Ty, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, this might be kind of a weird question, but I think I might have met you. Where were your treatment centers? Because I did a training in Florida.
I have trained in Florida.
God, that's so crazy.
I actually was a consultant for a little while.
Yes, that was.
On the west side, right?
Yes.
I want to tell you something about that, though, please. Can I do a little whining?
Yeah, sure.
Whining, sir. Well, anyway, whining and complaining is that, as I found through the years, all of these treatment programs wanted me to be like the honey to lure people into their treatment centers. They wanted heads in beds.
Yeah.
They did not want to follow any of the guidelines that I suggested had integrity, because you know what? Overeaters are wise and we can sniff out BS. And they wanted to keep practicing old BS on the staff level, on the level of cost cutting. And unfortunately, I couldn't stay in those situations. And
wow.
And counselors who did stay in those situations regained their weight.
Yeah, I bet. That's just crazy. I came on this meeting by accident, so I'm so, well, I guess not.
No accident. But also, let me tell you this. Also, the treatment programs have changed so much. If you find any of them left, they mostly want to treat anorexics and vomiters, because it's easy to hold that kind of person up and say, ew, aberrant behavior. But the truth is, everyone in our culture overeats and is addicted to carbs. So, oh no, they don't want to treat that, you know? So anyway, if you need a referral to a treatment program that I believe still maintains the 12 steps and still respects overeaters, I have one for you. Email me at judyhollis@aol.com or Google me. And I get no money from these people. I just think they're still practicing the old time religion. And I also go to a lot of workshops that I think are still the great old time program. So if you want to get on my list, just email me and I'll forward those to you.
It was really inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sweet Sarah in Iowa.
Oh! Hi.
Hi, Judy. I'm Sarah, grateful compulsive overeater. I had such a hard time finding this. I must have gotten on. It was missing a two, so I had to keep on. And I'm so glad I got here, and I missed part of it, but I have to ask you this. Because, you know, I've been through relapse, and Judy and I have recently met and connected, and I'm so grateful for you. And I've been through relapse, been in the program 25 years, and fortunately, I have come out of relapse in the last 9 months, and I'm so grateful for it, and found myself really not wanting to hurt myself anymore. And that's what I want to talk about, because I think so many of us have this, for me, and having sponsored a lot of people, almost like I don't deserve the good, so I sabotage myself. And I think that that's a very good topic, especially, you know, those, you know, I've lost 100 pounds, and two things that have happened for me, and then I'm gonna let you speak. One is that the sexual part of myself that feels attractive gets uncomfortable when I'm slim, because the world looks at me in a different way, and it ticks me off because I'm still who I am. And then the other part of me likes the attention, but doesn't know how quite to be okay and to protect myself in that place. Because if I was almost 300 and now I'm not, and that it's a different world, you know, it's a totally different. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. And you are wonderful. I love you. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think we should do a whole day workshop on the topic of deserving, because I have found for myself and many others, for whatever reason, you know, a lot of mine was, I was told, you know, you think too much of yourself. Who the hell do you think you are? You know? So then the program was saying, you're okay, God don't make no junk, we like you, da da da. And the other side would be ready to whack me back down. So feeling deserving is a very big issue. In terms of sexuality, I understand OA has just come out with a new book about sexuality that I would like to get. I wrote a book called Hot and Heavy about sexuality. You know, I just want to say to the guys on the program that guys have a lot of trouble with this one. Guys who are overweight and didn't realize that their bulk and their power helped them take a room, you know. And then men and women, without that shield, were feel so vulnerable, you know. I felt like my skin had been peeled off, you know, super sensitive. I think most important things in the program we have an ambivalent relationship with, and sexuality is one of them, you know. And I think you got to be careful of listening to too much of pop psychology. You know, there was a while there then that everybody was saying, well, if you're fat, you must have been incested. Well, I don't think I was, you know. And when I had, you know, staffings and counselors would come in and they'd report on a patient and they say, well, she's been incested. I say, well, what does that mean? What does she mean by that? Go back, find out. What does that mean? It's a label people use. So they went back and asked, and the person said, well, my dad used to walk around the house in his underwear. Well, that's inappropriate. It's boundaries. It's a lot of things. But we have to get our labels have to stop listening to labels. All of us, everything we need to know will be revealed to us in the course of time. But you know, the only way out is through. If I'm afraid of acting deserving, then the assignment is go out there and act deserving. I know when I had a treatment center, I used to take the patients out on flirt assignments. And some of you may have your judgments of this, but we would go to the car wash in our old van, because car wash, they hire a lot of ex-cons who are pretty horny toads, you know. And so the guys are there, you know, splashing the windows, and all my ladies get out of the van, and their assignment was, you have to flirt, okay? So they just had to walk around and sit and wait for the van to be finished. And these guys would pick off on the energy, and everybody would have a great afternoon. You know, nothing would happen from it. And then people would say, well, I can't date until I get thin. Nonsense. How are you going to know how to date? Start doing it now. Practice, fall down, stumble. To lose the fat risk, we must be at risk. Get up. So do, you know, whatever you're afraid of, it's only a delaying tactic. If you turn to the food, you're just delaying. If you keep walking around saying how afraid you are, you're just delaying. This is an action program. That's what I love about it. That's how it's different from therapy. It's not figuring out how you got here. It's showing you how to walk out of the mess. You can recover without ever understanding how you got so messed up. You really can.
Thank you. You talked about the treatment centers, and this is my question, and I've wondered that myself. Why is that, that they don't have, like, well, I know in the Midwest, well, especially I know in Indiana, there is nowhere to go if you're obese. You know, like you said, they have the anorexic, they have the bulimic. Why is that? What is the...
Two main reasons are, and it's what's happened in all addiction, really, is the money dried up, because the triumph of modern medicine, that it's cheaper to give you a, you know, they said, well, eating disorders are a Prozac deficiency. Cheaper to give you a $1.15 pill every day than to have treatment, and it's even cheaper to cut out your intestines. That's cheaper. However, those surgeries usually end up in alcoholism and weight gain. Some work, yes, but, you know, that's a whole other day-long topic. But basically, if you want to know the answer, it's usually a dollar sign. Sorry.
Thank you. Okay, I've got a couple questions here in the chat. When you were made fun of, did that give you an anger complex?
Sure. Yes, it did. I was very angry as a child. I got, in the eighth grade, I got suspended from school 8 times. I ran with a pachuco gang at age 13. I had no business. I had no business in these situations. But the opportunity to act out drew me. I was a shoplifter, shoplifting things I could easily afford, but I just had to get away with something. I had to feel powerful to overcome those voices. And all of that stuff has had to be dealt with in my recovery. It's a great journey. It's an adventure. Hang on for the ride. The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off.
Here's another. How did you stop eating chocolate?
Well, you know, I did find a food plan to live by. By the way, in my early years, it was gray sheet, which is basically, I guess, a lot like the keto today. I mean, it was very, very low carb. Not as much fat as keto gives you. but very low carb. Didn't even have oatmeal. I understand now Gray Sheet has oatmeal. Whoa! But we didn't get any of that. And by the way, I was literature chairman for my home meeting, so I had to drive my car up to Los Angeles to Roseanne's kitchen. And in Roseanne's kitchen, we did not have a Xerox machine. We had a mimeograph machine with ink in it. And we had to crank it around and print out on a gray sheet. We printed out the gray sheet food plan. On a blue sheet, we created the blue sheet. And on orange paper, we did the orange sheet. And those were the three suggested food plans. And they were all in varying degrees of carb. Because that's our primary love object, let's face it. So chocolate was not on my food plan for the first 20 years. Today, I have chocolate every once in a while. I do not treat it casually. I savor it. I enjoy. It's usually bittersweet, so that it's so... intense that I'm satisfied with a morsel. Let's call it a morsel. By the way, on this gray sheet, what you guys were suggesting as a meal were what I thought were appetizers. I mean, I couldn't believe that this was the food plan. Are you kidding? And, you know, I was the kind of eater that gained 20 pounds in a weekend. You know, I'm a quantity eater, and asking me to have 4 ounces. This is what I tell people who want to get the bypass surgery. I say, you know what? On the most strict OA suggested food plan, you get 4 ounces of protein. Why would you cut out your intestine and only be allowed to eat 2 ounces of protein? Right? You're nuts. And even if you get the surgery, you have to do the same crap that they make you do in OA anyway. So, you know, you have to be disciplined in how you eat, and you have to look at your psychology, and you have to practice behavior modification, and same thing.
Yeah. Thank you. Judy, can you explain your approach to sponsorship, and what's the best way to find a sponsor?
Well, the easiest way to find a sponsor is you hear something... somebody has what you want, and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it. You know, I worked as a therapist for, I guess, 30 years of my recovery. So it was always an issue about my sponsoring versus my therapy patients versus my hospital patients. And I always had to work that out with my sponsor. And she usually told me that my best way of providing service back was to do all this touring the country, lecturing. It got very tiring. I slept a lot. But she said, go wherever you're asked. I did OA retreats all around the country for many years. I loved it. And that was my returning service. And of course, at a home meeting, the different jobs. But in terms of sponsoring, I've been very limited in that over the years. I do very little of it. I have a couple people now that I sponsor. I do not sponsor food. I am not interested. I would have become a nutritionist if I wanted to talk that much about food. I just can't take it anymore. It's so boring to me. It just... So I can't live that way. So whoever I talk to has to have their own food sponsor. And basically I see that kind of sponsoring as a person who's a witness to what you've committed to yourself. They're not a judge and jury, and they're not an expert. They're only expert in saying, well, this is what I've done. Okay. Right now I have someone I'm working with who, wants to talk a lot, but not do the writing. And we're negotiating if I'm the right person for her. Because faith without works is dead. You have to do the work. And I can only share how I was directed to do it. I didn't like having to go back and write. I would call her up. This is an emergency. Well, write something and call me back. What? And the reason for that is so that you get on the blank page who you are, so that you can assess it then with that sponsor. You read it together and you talk about it. Because on the back of our coin, it says, to thine own self be true. And if you don't develop a plan of living and eating and being in the world that's true for you, then all you're doing is joining a cult. And that's what a lot of people like to do with this program. And then they drop away and they say, oh, it was only a cult. It was not a cult. You have to do your individual work to become your own person. Use us. People tell me so much. I say, you know what? Go to the meetings, chew them up and spit them out. You don't have to like anybody here. You don't have to make friends. This is not a friendship program. You know, I don't have that many more years left on the planet. I don't have time to get more friends. I got enough friends. I want to deliver what was given to me. I want to channel back all this wisdom. So really what works for me best right now is that people call me with questions. You know, if you email me, then I'll give you my phone number and whenever you have a question. But first, I hope you have looked at my webpage and listened to all my videos and tapes that are there for free and know where the hell I'm coming from, and then ask your question. Because I'm not in the debating society. I have no time for yeah buts. No time. I'm sorry. You have to be really committed to saving your own life. And I'll help you. I really will.
Thank you. What is your favorite slogan? Do you have a favorite slogan?
Of course, keep coming back. Because that's the only thing that works. And that also means get right back on the horse. My greatest moments in recovery have been in the middle of a bag of trail mix. You hear me? Mid bag, something says, maybe it's time to stop. And I take that bag, I call up, while the phone's at my ear, somebody helps me drown it in the sink. When I used to have a garbage disposal, we'd turn on the garbage disposal, and watch it together. A lady emailed me the other day. She said, my husband always leaves snacks around and then he goes to sleep and I eat them. And I said, well, I used the Frenchman I lived with for 10 years. He was the longest running until Henry. And he used to like ice cream and he would leave it in the freezer. And I said, here's the deal. I said, that ice cream can stay there as long as it doesn't call to me. The minute it calls to me, my sponsor and I will be on the phone at the sink. And it's going. And that was the deal, you know. And, you know, we have to create the right environments for ourselves. If we're serious, if you're fooling around, go get a diet.
Thank you so much, Judy. We are going to close our meeting. There were several chats just thanking you for your service and your wonderful speaking tonight. And what I'll do is I'll email those to you so you can read them yourself. But thank you very much. And I am going to stop the recording now and close our meeting.